Thanks. First of all, let me thank the organizer to give me the opportunity to talk here at a great conference. So I will discuss the work about the negativity in conformal field theory. So the main part is about the work done with Pasquale Calabrese and John Cardy some years ago. And then I will focus in the second part on some more recent work with Pasquale Calabrese and John Cardy again on the finite temperature case, and also with Cristiano De Nobili and Andrea Coser, Pasquale Calabrese on some other aspects. Actually, Andrea Coser is here, so please find him if you need any clarification about these two works. So this is. Okay. So this is the outline of the talk. So mainly it's about negativity, so this measure of entanglement, well known in quantum information, how to compute it in two-dimensional CFTs. So let me go to the. So this is a brief review of the replica limit for the Rényi entropies, which is going to be the main tool that we are using to compute also negativity. So whenever you have a system and you bipartite ground state, then you can introduce the reduced density matrix, and then the von Neumann entropy, which is the entanglement entropy, is obtained by computing first this moment, which are called Rényi entropies, and then taking the limit when this integer n goes to 1. As you will see, this is not obvious, an obvious computation. But why we talk about negativity? So the question is what happened? So suppose now you tripartite your system, so this is B, A1, and A2, and you trace this B part of the Hilbert space. So what you are left with is a mixed state. And then if you further divide this mixed state, you can ask what is the entanglement between A1 and A2. And actually, the mutual information that is a very nice quantity that one can construct does not answer to this question. And that's why other measures of entanglement are needed. So in quantum information, many quantities have been defined to study this question. But actually, this is nice because, as Giffre, Vidal, and Werder emphasized, it's computable in the sense that I will show later. So first, let me remind why the disjoint interval is interesting in the context of a CFT. The basic reason is that the case of one interval, that this is the famous formula by Wilczek and collaborator that has been rederived by John Pasquale, is basically the entanglement entropy for one interval at zero temperature is sensible only to the central charge of your model. Instead, if you consider a disjoint interval, you can see from this expression, which is pretty complicated, but which it's a short interval expansion. For disjoint interval, all basically not only the central charge, which is here, but all the spectrum of the conformal field theory, all the dimension and the correlation function enters. And so it's a more richer case. And so even more complicated to deal with. So let's come to the definition of negativity. So as I said, this is the typical situation. So you tripartite, and this is a mixed state. So what you do, you introduced a new object, which is a partial transpose of the reduced density matrix, which is defined as follows. So the matrix element, if you take a basis of this A1, of the Hilbert space here, then the matrix element of the partial transpose with respect to the second part is obtained by taking the matrix element of the reduced density matrix and exchanging the indices only for the second part here, so J, L, L, J. This is a definition. And once you have this, it's a new matrix, and it's not a density matrix anymore. Indeed, the key feature is that this matrix has also negative eigenvalues. And so you can define the trace norm of this matrix, which is the sum of the absolute value of the eigenvalues. And then, since this matrix is normalized to 1, In the end, this trace norm captures the sum of all the negative eigenvalues, so that's why it has been called negativity. And then if you take the log, this is the definition of the negativity, and quantum information people made a lot of work proving basically that this is a good measure of entanglement. And in particular, a nice property of this quantity is that if you have a bipartite system in any state, so not necessarily a pure state, then the negativity obtained by partial transpose this part is equal to the negativity obtained by partial transpose the second part. So this is not true if you think about entanglement entropy, for instance, in a thermal state, right? Okay, so how do you compute? Can we compute it? The idea is to consider again some replica limit approach. So it's useful to consider this quantity. So you take this new matrix, the partial transpose, and you take the nth power, right? Integer n. And then it's immediate to realize that there is a parity effect depending on whether this n is even or odd. Indeed, the idea is that you have to plug in the absolute values, right? And then you see that there is this plus sign and minus sign here. And then from this expression, you immediately realize that if you want to compute the sum of the modulus of the eigenvalues, you have to take this even number here and set it to 1. So you have to perform an analytic continuation. You have to take this even sequence of this object for even number 2, 4, 6, etc. And then analytically continue this sequence setting this even number to 1. If you do the same for the odd sequence, you just get the normalization. So this was true for any state, right? So this is the definition. So what happened for a pure state? So it's for a pure state, so if you take the typical situation of a bipartite Hilbert space in a ground state, then you can use mixed decomposition, and you can realize that this object here is related to the usual Rényi entropies. When you, this rho 2 is the density matrix, this density matrix associated to this part. So there is this nice identities relating the Rényi negativities, let's say, to the Rényi entropies, and this identity is parity dependent, right? So for this is true for n odd and n even, the relation is different. And the prescription is to take this sequence and set this n to 1. And so you immediately realize that for pure state, the negativity is equal to the Rényi entropy for n equal 1 half. And this is true for any system, right? So, you know, if you have some holographic system, some massive theory, and you know the Rényi entropies for any n, you bipartite a pure state, then you put n equal 1 half, and you get the negativity. So this is when the whole system is in a pure state, but this is not true for mixed state. So how to make the computation in CFT? So for this, I need to briefly remind the method introduced by John and Pasquale in 2004 to compute Rényi entropies. The idea is that you take your system and then you replicate it, and then you end up with this n-sheeted partition function. This one is the number of intervals here, and little n is the number of replicas. And then the Rényi entropies here is computed by evaluating the partition function of your CFT on this n-sheeted Riemann surface, right? So this is true for any quantum field theory, but for CFT, this two-point function of twist field can be written in this way. And so the object that we need is the conformal dimension of this twist field operator, right? And once you have this, then it's really one-line computation to derived this famous result by Wilczek and collaborator. So this is for one interval, but as I said, we need to complicate our situation. So you can extend the analysis to any number of interval, capital N. And in CFT, this object is a 2n point function on a plane of this twist field. And then global, by using global conformal invariance, you can basically fix these three points. You can fix this one to zero, this one to infinity, and this one to one, and you are left with 2n minus 3. This capital N is the number of intervals, harmonic ratio, right? And then the difficult part is to evaluate this function here, which can be obtained as a partition function on a n-sheeted Riemann surface, little n, the number of replica, but the fact that now you have many intervals, it ended up in dealing with higher genus Riemann surface. These are this is an example of three copies, three intervals, and then these Riemann surfaces is basically as something like this. This is an example when you have three intervals, so you have to think that each copy here can be deformed into something like this. And here is an example of three intervals, one, two, three, and four copies, one, two, three, four. And okay, so this is the kind of object that you are dealing with. And this is a technical slide, but it's just to convince you that one can make computation, basically by using a technique found at least in simple model, like free compact boson and Ising model. You can use a result derived in string theories many years ago. Basically, you have to, this is the mathematical definition of the surface that I gave before, and you have to compute the period matrix, basically, on these Riemann surfaces, which is a generalization to higher genus Riemann surfaces of the modulus for the torus. Now it's a matrix, and it's G times G. G is the genus, and for the cases of capital N interval and little n replicas, this is the expression of the genus, and you have to consider this Riemann theta function. And what I want to emphasize here is that the n dependence is very difficult to deal with because it enters in the size of a matrix, and also here in the size of the vectors that you have to sum over. But still, you can write explicit expression for the Ising model and for the compact boson. This eta e is related to the compactification radius. And once you have this, you can compare with data. So this is the some numerical results from the XXZ model obtained by Pasquier and collaborator, and for the Ising model using three tensor network. So here, what we did is we took a method based on the Padé approximation that has been discussed also yesterday, as suggested by Edric and collaborator in 2 plus 1 dimension, and we just make an extrapolation. This is a numerical extrapolation of the theta function, that, and this is the comparison with the numerical result, so it works pretty well. So, but I want to emphasize that it's a numerical thing, and we don't know how to derive analytically this expression in the most generic case. So let's come to the partial transposition. So the idea is the following. Now consider the simple situation of two disjoint intervals. So as I said, this is obtained in CFT by considering a four-point function of twist operator in this order, right? T bar is the anti-twist, and it's basically the inverse of this, in the sense that if you take this operator on the top of this, you get identity. And in terms of Riemann surfaces, this is the Riemann surfaces, and it's important to emphasize how these cuts, the different copies are attached, right, in this way. So the idea is that in order to compute instead this object, so the partial transpose with respect to the second interval, you simply have to exchange T with T bar. And in terms of Riemann surfaces, it means that you have to attach your copies in this way. Right? So on the first interval is this order, but then you reverse, right? You exchange the row and the column only here. And so this is how you should attach your copies. But in terms of correlation function, you have to evaluate now this object here. Okay, so this is the idea. So what happened for pure states? For pure states, so you have your system bipartite in this way. It's useful to think this situation of a bipartition as a limit of two disjoint intervals. So when you take the rest, B, you start from this situation, then you exchange these two twist field, and then you send B to the empty set. Okay, if you do this, it's clear that in conformal field theory now you have to consider this two-point correlation function, so not T, but T square. And actually, if you have a field, the square of the field has different properties with respect to the original field, and in particular, the T square can be thought as a guy telling you that you should connect not if you start from one copy and you turn around it, you connect it not to the next one, but to the second, the next to next, right? So, and this, if you take this interpretation, you immediately realize this parity effect in field theory now, because suppose you have four copies, you start from the first one, you turn around at T square, you jump to the third one, then you turn around at T square, and you jump again to the to the first one. So you never see the second and the third. Instead, if you have an odd number of copies like this, you start here, you go to the third, you go to the fifth, and then you jump by two, you go to the second, you go to the third. So in two rounds, you see all the Riemann surface. Instead, for even even n, you have this parity effect. You have this decoupling of the Riemann surface. In terms of the field theory, this turns out that this object is related to the usual twist field, not squared, that you have for the Renyi entropy. Right? And so now you specialize this to two-dimensional CFT, and from this relation you can read off the dimension of this T square, which is parity dependent, in particular for even for odd n is the same as the dimension of T. But for even n is slightly different, and the replica limit tells you that if you take n equal this even sequence, you set n equal 1, you get back, you get this result, which is exactly the Renyi 1/2, because this is pure state. Okay, so this is a consistency check. So the next non-trivial case, where now you can really deal with mixed state, is this one, which is adjacent interval. Which means that now I don't set B to empty set anymore, so I take the reduced density matrix of this part and I partial transpose this. So in terms of CFT correlator, now I have to deal with a three-point function, and then one can make this analysis and find the negativity for this situation. L1 and L2 are the sizes of these two intervals. And then, for two disjoint interval, you can repeat the same, and then now the negativity is depends on the harmonic ratio of these four points, and it's important to realize that it's finite, it's UV finite, you see, and then you have to basically make the analytic continuation of this function of the harmonic ratio that I discussed before. So this is some numerical check for two adjacent interval in the harmonic chain and for the Ising model. And as you can see, there is a perfect agreement. And this is the same check for disjoint intervals for harmonic chain. It's useful to construct this ratio here, which is the ratio between the partial transpose to the nth power and the Reinie entropies of the same situation because many factors cancel. So this is the simplest example we can think about, which is the non-compact boson. And this object here depends only, it's a complicated function, but it depends only on this harmonic ratio, x, which goes from 0 to 1. And in principle, one should, in order to get the negativity, one should take analytically continue this expression to take the n even and send n even to 1. So this is for the negativity, so these are the numerics from the harmonic chain. And then I want to emphasize that we can make the analytic continuation in this regime, so adjacent close interval, and this is the analytic result, which is the dashed red line. Surprisingly, it works up to here. And instead, we are missing this part, which is very interesting because it's an exponential decay here, and would be nice to find it in an analytic way. So we use this extrapolation method to check this, and so, but still, it's an open problem to find the analytic continuation on the whole range of x. You can make the same analysis for the Ising model. This has been done also by Vincenzo Alba, which is also here. He used Monte Carlo technique. We used three tensor network technique, which at least gives access to the negativity, which is not true for the Monte Carlo technique. And in the case of, so we confirm the CFT result, but we have no clue for the negativity. So these are the data, but we are not able to put any analytical curve here, basically because one should make the analytic continuation of this horrible expression. Okay, then I wanna go to the finite temperature case, which is a work done with Pasquale and John last year. What happened for one interval at finite temperature? So there is a naive approach that one can take once one understand that this is the two-point function on the plane that at zero temperature, then it's very tempting to conformal map the cylinder at finite temperature to the plane and write down this expression, which is exactly the Reinie 1/2. But actually, this is not the right thing to do because first, because this is the Reinie 1/2, and it's known that Reinies are not a measure of entanglement at finite temperature. And then secondly, because this object at large at high temperature diverge linearly because of this cinch here, this log. And this is not consistent with the fact that you expect that when the system become classical, then the entanglement, the quantum entanglement, should vanish, right? So this is not the right thing to do. Actually, you have to think more of what you are doing with the partial transpose. So this is your quantum field theory at finite temperature in 1 plus 1. This is your bipartition A and B. And this is a single copy. So the meaning of these arrows is that basically when you go, you have to think that this is a copy, but that there is another one. And if you go in this direction, then you go upstairs. And then along B, if you go in this direction, you go upstairs to the next copy. Right? It's difficult to imagine, but this is the meaning of these arrows. And then you can imagine to deform slightly this cut along B. And then you see that if you deform it, this arrow here, when they cross, this arrow annihilates, and this arrow here go and enforce this arrow here. And so the ended situation is this, basically telling you that when you go in this direction along A, you have to jump by two copies. You have to not consider the next copy and jump to the second one, which is what is expected, but the unexpected thing is that this defect remains connecting this copy with the next one, right? So in the finite temperature case, there's no factorization anymore for even n because of this defect which is still there, right? If you do the same analysis for a zero temperature, you are on a sphere, so you take your you deform your like before, but now you see that this defect can be sent to the North Pole and shrink to the point, and you are left only with this. And so this is the topological reason of this factorization for even n. So you can also make computation, and actually the result for the negativity at finite temperature in 1 plus 1 conformal CFT is this one. Basically the idea is to place some auxiliary twist field here and then send them to infinity. And this is the result, the beta is the temperature, L is the size of the interval. And the thing is that this object, which is a four-point function of t bar squared, t squared, t bar, enters, and then to compute the negativity, you have to take this limit. And this is very important, but unfortunately, we are not able to do it. But we can write this expression and extract some information, some physical information in particular. You can check this property, it's a consistency check, and then a comment that, again, also in this situation, you see that again the full operator contour of the model enters. And fortunately, the linear divergence in for higher, higher temperature cancel. This is why. We think that this is basically correct, and it happens because you have to enforce the OPE, the correct OPE between this operator, right? And once you do that, you find this object that cancels exactly the linear divergence here, and then log term can enter from this analytic continuation, but as I said, we are not able to do it. So the last topic I want to cover is what happens for the two disjoint block in XY spin chain. So this is the Hamiltonian of an XY spin chain with periodic boundary condition. Capital L is the size, and then this H is the magnetic field, and gamma is the anisotropy. And this model. This model contains the Ising model in a transverse field and also the XX spin chain. So the usual, this is just a reminder, how usually this model is treated by through the Jordan-Wigner transformation. So you can introduce this this operator and then this Majorana fermion in this way. And if this is a standard technique to diagonalize this object. But now what happens is that if you consider two disjoint block here, then the non-trivial string of Majorana operator in between these two interval in this part, B1, enters in a crucial way. And in particular, as Pasquale Calabrese and Maurizio Fagotti emphasize, one can write the Renyi entropies. This is for Renyi entropies. You can write the Renyi entropies in this way, where these four objects are Gaussian, right? So this is the reduced density matrix for the free fermion, basically. But now, if you have the string here, then you have this other Gaussian operator. This is an auxiliary reduced. It's an auxiliary density matrix because you have the presence of the string here, right? Okay, so this was for Renyi entropies. So what we did is to take a nice result recently obtained by Esler and Zimboras about how to deal with the partial transpose for a Gaussian operator and generalize it to this XY spin chain. And basically, the outcome is that you can write the partial transpose with respect to the second block, again, as a sum of four Gaussian operators here. And this is generalization of this result here, because when you cancel the string, you get back to two Gaussian. And then once you write this, you can check some CFT prediction about this object, in particular the Ising chain, XX chain, and the free fermion. This is the result, for instance, for the free fermion for five n little n equal 5. And this is the CFT prediction, which is this expression here, again, in terms of theta function. And this tau tilde is the period matrix where the period matrix evaluated in this way on this combination of x. This expression is known, is explicitly known, there is a constant, and then it's but the message is that the main message of this slide is that even in the simple case of free fermion, when you consider the partial transpose, then you have to deal with not only a Gaussian thing, but two Gaussian operators. Okay, so this is the end. So basically, what I discuss is the entanglement negativity in simple 1+1 model, like free boson, Ising model, free fermion, and also the finite temperature case. I want to emphasize that people during the last year, people study negativity also in various other interesting cases, like topological system. There are some results for the holographic case. And also in the in the case of quantum quench, and but there are still many open questions. I think the most interesting ones are these ones. So should certainly understand better how to perform the analytic continuation. Then we should go to higher dimension. Would be interesting to consider models where interacting terms enter in the Lagrangian explicitly. And then, of course, would be nice to have some Ryuta-Kayanagi version of this quantity. So if you, these are interesting things that I would be happy to discuss. So thank you, that's fine.
Questions?
So the purpose of the entanglement negativity was to somehow separate out the amount of entanglement from the amount of classical correlation, which is measured by the mutual information. So can you comment on what qualitative information you can extract from your results, either numerical or analytic, about the entanglement structure of these field theories?
So there is this nice result by Perez about the, because this negativity has been introduced to study the separability of the state, right? So whether a density matrix is separable or not. So there is this Perez criterion tells that if the partial transpose is positive, so all the eigenvalues are positive, then the state is separable. The opposite is not always true in general. And so I would say that here you have many hints that tells you that this quantity is the right thing to study, to separate the quantum entanglement from the classical. A typical thing is the so-called sudden death that I haven't discussed here, but basically is the observation that if you consider the finite temperature case and you compute the negativity for a single interval, then you see something like this on the lattice. So basically there's a critical value after which the entanglement negativity is zero. And this is a feature of the lattice model that we don't see it in a quantum field theory. But probably this exponential decay, it's related to this fact. So I don't really know whether and how this quantity really isolate the quantum entanglement with respect to the classical one. But the fact that you have this exponential decay, you have this sudden death for the lattice model, yeah, maybe would be interesting to study other quantities that measure the entanglement for mixed state. But they are not really computable in the sense that they are even the definition are quite complicated. Instead, here the good feature is that you have a matrix and then you study the eigenvalues of a matrix, and that's why it's this quantity is easy to deal with, easier than the other ones. But yeah.
One more question.
So I think you compared the CFT results with trace of low partial transpose to some power of n,
yeah.
And they agreed very well. But you also showed somewhere that this negativity you couldn't compare with analytical formula was because you couldn't take n goes to one limit from CFT formula. I couldn't quite.
Yeah,
follow.
So that's. So this is for an harmonic chain, mm-hmm. periodic harmonic chain. So these are the numerics, the dots here. So the analytic result that we have, so which is basically by continuing this expression with the hypergeometric, is this one, where also this constant is known. This is an elliptic K function. And this is the red dashed line. Which is surprising, the fact that it works up to here, and because the analytic continuation has been done by expanding around this point, but the result works up to here, so it's good. What we cannot do is to analytically continue all over. In particular, we are missing this exponential decay here, right? This is a log plot of the same data, and. We are missing an analytic derivation of this exponential. This is for the simplest model we can deal with, and then this is for the Ising model, where here we don't even have a clue here.
So that you cannot take n goes to one.
Yeah, one should take this and set to take the evens n even. And then analytically continue.
Oh, you have the product in the denominator, so that's the...
Yeah, product, but the product maybe you can deal with. Uh-huh. But the beast is this object here, this theta function. Uh-huh. And we cannot even make the numerical extrapolation that Matt suggested, because we would need higher n, a lot of n, and... And here it's difficult to evaluate this theta, at least with our technology, mathematical, basically.
So you cannot even take n equals to 1.001 or something?
No. We can. These theta are really defined for integer n. And if we could numerically take n equal to 40, then numerically one can use this extrapolation method and maybe get that. But here we can reach n up to 10. Then you have two very few data to perform a stable table. So that's the, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll reconvene at 2 o'clock. Let's thank Eric again.